Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.
Good morning and welcome to the show. Today is Monday, January 18th. After a weekend, did you have a good weekend, Kelsey?
It was good. It was lots of work.
Really?
Yes, I didn't really get to take off. We were doing lots of filming, so
really,
we stayed busy. We went down to Dana Point yesterday.
Did you have good weather out there?
Actually, now that you mention it, no. It was so cold, and I don't fare well in cold weather.
Really?
Thin-skinned, apparently. Yeah. So I just about died. By the time the third and last routine came along, it seemed like the minutes were hours.
Wow.
I was like, hurry up.
And you had to be like workout clothes and stuff. So.
Oh, no. I was actually just filming. We had another.
Oh, really?
We had a talent hired. Her name's Julia. She's from San Diego. And so she comes up and meets us halfway there. But yeah, I mean, I don't even know how she does it. She is such a rock star. Like, she was literally in a tank top and yoga pants, and I was bundled up, and we were still dying. So. But she was fine. I don't know.
Wow. So it was cold maybe because it was like on the beach or something, right?
It is. Yeah. It's much colder, you know, by the beach. And the wind is really the main
issue.
It's
windy,
Yes. And it was so funny as the sun, you know, kind of started to set, everybody started clearing out, and then we realized how absolutely insane we were.
Yeah.
Because there's nobody else there, and there's a really good reason. We were like, but we got it done, and you know, content turned out good.
Yeah.
And let's see, then Saturday we filmed, where did we film? Along the coast as well.
Oh, nice.
And yeah, and so that was lots of fun, and we filmed some dance routines, which is always a good time. We took like a little dance crew of three girls down to the beach. Yeah, and you know, it's all choreographed, and it kind of reminds you of, you know, 80s dance music.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, so that's fun. You know, it doesn't probably feel a lot like work for you.
It doesn't. Yeah. No, that's what I love about it.
Yeah, you're very fortunate in that way.
Yeah.
I'm sure a lot of people would say, oh, I would take that kind of life, you know, so... You see, it's what you make of it.
Right.
You know?
I mean, we get to travel. And
yeah.
Yeah, we like it.
Yeah, very cool. So why don't you plug your website, Jimbra, and tell people what it's about?
Yeah, sure. So it's GYMRA.com. It's just like Gym Rat, but without the T. That one was taken, or we would have gotten it. But we thought Jimbra rolled off the tongue pretty nicely, nonetheless. So that's the name of the website, and it's completely renovated.
Right.
I'm still waking up this morning.
Maybe. Yeah.
I haven't had my coffee. And so we're having lots of giveaways, actually, which is really fun. This is the part I love. We're getting into the part I love. So we're doing this body challenge, and we're actually releasing the video today. I don't think we've done it yet on our YouTube page, but we will, and we'll also release it on the website. But you know, a lot of our users just go to YouTube and look at us. But it's $2,000 cash to the winner, and basically you pick a program. It's just 30 days. You can do anything for 30 days, right?
Uh-huh.
And you pick a program of ours, and you do it, and it's free because the first 30 days are free.
Right.
So that's why we designed it that way. So it doesn't cost anything to enter.
Wow.
And yeah, and you know, you take a picture before, or actually a video before, you know, just like your name, the date, and the program you decided to choose. And then after you've completed 30 days, then you'll take another video and send it to us.
Yeah, there you go. We got to see the body, right?
I know.
I mean, that's what it's about.
Yes. And it's just, it's so great. We can't wait. We've gotten such a good response. You know, we gave away a Fitbit. There's really popular Fitbit things. And I mean, our tweet got retweeted a million times, and you know, the winner was really happy. So yeah, we're doing lots of little giveaways coming up. And so it's fun. And it's just, it's easy stuff. I mean, the body challenge is pretty involved. You know, that takes a bit of commitment. But, you know, a lot of the other things are, you know, retweeting or tagging us in a photo. And it's just, it's really easy stuff. It doesn't take 2 seconds. And,
yeah.
You know, you can win a cool prize.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm all for it. You know, I mean, I don't know if you noticed, but on some websites, they'll only show you pictures of their face, you know, never of the body. I don't know if guys do it as much, but women do. And the thing is, I realize if there's no picture of the body, it's probably not something that she's proud of. And 9 times out of 10, I'm right.
Yes, you probably are. You know,
so, yeah.
You've been spending too much time online dating. You know all the rules now. You're like, no body picture. You're hiding something. That's so true, though.
Well, I'm not dating, but I'm trying to anyway. But these things are funny. Yeah, it's very funny. So
it's an interesting phenomenon, but it's true. That is the case most of the time.
Yeah. Isn't everybody looking for somebody? I mean, what the hell?
You know? So true. Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, but... so yeah, you start learning what's going on, you know, and you realize, you go, wait a minute, you know, that's not what I expected at all, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I've online dated. Everyone's, it's not just, it's a young people thing too. It's
right.
Not, you know, I think it's so funny because I remember even when I was, you know, maybe in high school, which wasn't too long ago, it was still kind of taboo to online date,
right.
You know, especially like amongst my peers, like, oh my gosh, if I ever have to go to match.com, like I'll shoot myself.
Oh,
you
really?
Know?
Yeah.
Yes. But now everyone
does it.
My girlfriend's online date.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everyone does it. And it's, you know, inclusive of all ages. So
right. It gives you access to thousands of people, you know, but I think also the same reason, that same, reason is also that people go through other people really quickly. You know, it's like you don't give anybody the time of day.
Right.
You know,
because I guess because you're not maybe having to make as much of an effort. Like before.
Right, exactly.
You know, before you had to get dressed up, you had to put on cologne, you had to go to a restaurant or bar, you know, you had to spend a little time there, look around. And so when you found somebody, it was like, oh, okay. But right. Now, you know, it's just right there at your fingertips.
Right. So. And, you know, and it's hard to try to meet anybody just based on pictures or things that they write, you know? I mean, there's something to say about the connection and the chemistry, you know? And sometimes you just realize everything on paper looks perfect, but there isn't that chemistry once you meet them.
Oh, you have to meet them, of course. I mean,
you know,
it's
that's what
insane.
I'm saying. So what I say is don't build up any stories. Don't start planning a wedding or anything before you meet the person.
That is so true. You know, I hear all of these stories, and I'm a major crime show watching addict.
Really?
And, oh, my gosh, I love it. I watch Investigation Discovery, like, every night. And, you know, you hear all these horror stories about women and men sometimes too, but it's primarily women who, you know, fall in love online and, you know, end up doing all these crazy things for this guy. And to me, it's just bizarre. I won't judge because, hey, never say never, I guess. But,
right.
You know, to me, I don't know. It's just such a bizarre thing. You just don't really know someone until you meet them. And, hey, even then.
Yeah, exactly.
Give it 20 years, right? You'll find out all kinds of new things.
Exactly, true. Yeah, so I guess the conclusion is don't rush into things, you know?
Yeah, I guess that is the conclusion.
Yeah. Well, in a few minutes, we're going to have a guest calling in. We're going to talk about fascinating things like conspiracy theories and things like that.
I'm excited
about
that.
I like that stuff, you know.
Me too.
So we're going to have a filmmaker that's taking on conspiracy theories in the documentary, which sounds interesting. So, I think there he is. I think he's calling
now. Speak of the devil.
Yeah. And hopefully we have... Mr. James Lambert on the line. Are you with us?
Yes, this is James Lambert.
Yes, James. Good morning. Welcome to the show, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
Good, good.
Good.
Where are you calling us from this morning?
I'm calling from Minneapolis, Minnesota.
Oh, wow. Didn't we just have a guest from there? I mean, we just had a guest from there, Kelsey, on Friday, and we were talking to her about the weather and everything.
Oh, we did.
Yeah,
that's
I mean,
right.
Minnesota, how can you not talk about the weather, right?
Yeah. Especially it's like our coldest weekend of the year.
Yeah. Oh no. So oh, no. My little Dana Point freezing adventure was nothing. Yeah, pales exactly. In comparison, I'm sure.
I know if we can't wear shorts and t-shirts here, it's cold. It's freezing for us here. So, well, this is cool. So I guess living in the snow and stuff gives you a lot of time to plan to write films and research things and stuff like that. So so you wrote to us, and you're a documentary filmmaker and a professor of film. Are you still a professor as we speak, or is that something you did in the past?
I still am.
Oh, great. Where do you teach?
I teach at Minneapolis Media Institute, and I'm also, my title is program chair, so I oversee the other instructors, and then I teach a couple classes myself.
Oh, wow. So you've got a film background, obviously.
Yeah, I went to University of North Texas, uh-huh. And I got a...
Oh, by Dallas. I almost went there, actually.
Really?
I did. I went to the University of Texas at Austin and majored in broadcast journalism. I was almost an RTF film major, but yeah, it was a toss-up between you and TU Texas.
Cool. How did you end up at that school, James?
I applied to only schools in the South to go to graduate school. Just wanted to check out warmer weather for a while.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good thing to do. So, when did you start getting involved in films and things like that? Is that something you've been doing for a long time?
It's something I was always interested in. Uh-huh. But my life kind of took an unusual course, and it wasn't until my late 20s that I decided to go back to college and then go to graduate school and actually pursue something.
Oh, wow.
There you go.
Yeah. Now, you know, it sounds unusual for a filmmaker not to be in L.A. or something, or at least in New York. Do you find it difficult? I mean, maybe to market your film or to do anything with it, being that you're in the Midwest?
Yeah, definitely. It's harder to find, you know, money. It's harder to find good, talented people to work with.
Right.
It's any number of things that's more difficult, but that's why, you know, I've spent a lot of my time teaching. You just have to decide, you know, I wanted to have a family and a life that was not just pursuing being in film.
Right, exactly. And LA is a place that's definitely all about pursuing film.
Yes, it's so hard to get to that point. You know, I'm still young. I'm 26, but yeah, you start thinking, do I want to have a family, or do I want to keep pursuing my career forever or go back home? It's like, oh my gosh, all these decisions.
Yeah. And LA may not be a compatible place for you, you know, so but you still want to make films. And so you just released a film last year, 2015, called Conspiracy Theorists Lie. I guess the title pretty much tells a story, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But how long have you been, preoccupied or interested in conspiracy theories?
I think sometime in, say, the late 70s or the early 80s, uh-huh. I saw a film called Executive Action, which was actually made in, like, 71 or 72. And I saw it on, you know, late-night television back before we had VCRs or anything. And it was this Kennedy conspiracy film. And that got me interested in the subject. And then I read some things from the public library and stuff in the 80s, and then by the early 90s, Oliver Stone came out with his film, and I was really into it and thought, you know, this was really gospel truth.
Right.
And then I went down to Dealey Plaza in the mid-90s and saw it for myself, and I thought, you know, this place is a lot smaller than it looks on film, and and things just don't work the same as you thought they did in the film. And I'm like, I could have made that shot. I'm not the best, you know, with a gun, but I could have made that shot. It's pretty close.
Yeah.
And everything just seemed really different. So then I started to actually read, you know, the facts of the case, not just the people who not just the conspiracy theorists. And I realized point after point I had been lied to. Mm-hmm. And so when I went to graduate school, I made a film at the 40th anniversary in 2003. and I interviewed people about why they were coming there and stuff. And then I decided to go back for the 50th anniversary in 2013, and this time I was more confrontational. This time I handed out little booklets that said conspiracy theorists lie, and I filmed my interactions with people who were not happy about what I was doing.
Yeah. So did you start going to conventions and things like that, or gatherings of conspiracy theorists and stuff?
I didn't. There are two competing conventions that happen in Dallas every year. Uh-huh. You know, like two rival groups of conspiracy theorists. And I knew that I wouldn't last long if I tried to go to one of those things.
Yeah,
so
I
had to meet them in the public space of Dealey Plaza.
Right. Well, so obviously you've been fascinated with the Kennedy assassination and so forth. What other conspiracy theories, or what other conspiracies are out there, or theories that are out there that are in your film?
I just touch on you know, like how people are getting into 9/11 conspiracy theories, and how some people, you know, think the moon landing is a hoax. Some people think the Holocaust is a hoax. You know, I touch on those things a little bit, but the film mainly deals with the Kennedy assassination because I think it's like the gateway drug into the conspiracy world.
Yeah. I am so fascinated with that as well. Can you kind of tell us what you think happened?
I think it's very straightforward. I think that Oswald was a nutty guy who wanted to be somebody, and he got an opportunity, and he shot the president.
You don't think it was the mob?
You know, no, I don't think there's any group that could have gotten that many people to go along with it and to never deviate from their story.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there are 400 plus people who worked on the Warren Commission. Mm. You know, in Watergate, you couldn't keep a half dozen people from talking for, you know, even 2 weeks.
That's true.
And, you know, to believe that we've gone 50 plus years and that multiple generations have continued to tell the story, you just can't get that many people to lie.
Well, that's true. And the same with 9/11, too. You know, I mean, all these conspiracies and everything, it's like you would need to have so many people lie and not even leak a word that it seems impossible to me.
Yeah. And you think of the number of people who would be involved. You'd have to.
Right.
You have to buy the explosives, you have to ship the explosives, you have to plant the explosives, you have to get the security look the other way, then you have to go remove all the evidence from the debris. I mean, you're talking about hundreds of people involved.
That's true, yeah. So how do you debunk some of these theories? I mean, do you in the film? Or do you just
I try to give some people some background on the film. So I showed them things that happened in history where these lies like came into the culture. Uh-huh. Like one thing is Geraldo Rivera.
Right.
he used to have a show called Good Night America. It was a late night talk show.
Right.
And in 1975, he was the first person to actually show the Zapruder film on air.
Right.
That's the first time that people actually saw President Kennedy get shot. And so I show, you know, what actually happened on that show, and then I show how it was distorted and how it was misrepresented right from the start.
Uh-huh.
And so there are several points like that in the film where I show you who first told this lie and, you know, how it became popular.
Right. Wow. So, well, we're talking to filmmaker James Lambert. The film is Conspiracy Theorists Lie. How can people watch the film?
If you go to nomagicbullets.org,
uh-huh,
you can watch it right there. You can also watch it on Amazon's on-demand service.
Okay.
And you can watch it on IndieFlix.com, which is like a, you know, Netflix for independent film.
Right. That's very cool. So there are so many different ways for filmmakers to market their movies today that it's really cool. You know, I mean, the thing is, you don't need a big studio to distribute your film and everything. You can get directly to the consumer, which is great.
Yes, it is.
You know, that's very cool. So the website is nomagicbullets.org, or, of course, you can go to like we said, to Amazon or IndieFlix.com.
Yep.
And, I mean, that sounds pretty cool. Now, I wanted to ask you, how long did it take you to put it together, the film?
It took me about a year and a half of, you know, working on it on the side. Mm-hmm. The biggest thing was just deciding how I wanted to frame the story, how much of the past I wanted to explain before getting into my interactions with people. Right. And then I had to find somebody to write some decent music for me, because mm-hmm. that's something that really sets a good film apart from something that looks very amateur, is having some professional music in it.
That's true, yeah. And how long is the film?
It's 2 hours and 25 minutes.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
That's a lot of work, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I mean,
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of history, and it's about 45 minutes of me actually interacting with people, mm. and the rest of it is a lot of historical things like the Geraldo bit.
Wow.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
So did you say we could find it on Netflix?
No, it's IndieFlix.
IndieFlix.
Okay,
right. Great.
Yeah, there's IndieFlix.com. And, also you guys can download it directly from nomagicbullets.org. What's No Magic Bullets? Is that your company?
Yeah, I mean, it's something I set up to hopefully fund future documentaries. I want to do not necessarily all conspiracy stuff, but I want to do stuff that's about history and about our understanding of the past.
Right. Do you go back as far as, I guess you did mention Holocaust deniers and things like that. So, I mean, how far back do you go with some theories?
Well, in the film, I pretty much start with Kennedy.
I see, okay.
Touch on those things from there. But I've been researching this and writing about it, and what I have found in my research is that all conspiracy theorist thinking comes out of, you know, European history, where the first big enemy of society was the Jews. It was all about Jew hating and the Jews secretly trying to take over, you know, kidnap our children. There was all these stories going back to the Middle Ages about the Jews.
Right.
And that's why the Holocaust happened, is because of this whole history of conspiracy stories about the Jews.
Yeah.
And, you know, Hitler believed all of them. His people believed them. And that's why they did what they did. And now, since then, a lot of people are like, okay, we don't want to be like the Nazis. We don't want to hate Jews. But they just take those same stories and they apply them to other groups.
That's
be it the Freemasons or the Bilderbergers or the CIA or whatever. But they imagine that if the Jews didn't do it, somebody did it.
Right. Yeah. Wow.
How interesting. Now, would you ever want to venture out into mainstream filmmaking, or do you want to stick to documentaries primarily?
I mean, I like making documentaries. I think it's something that I'm good at. But I certainly have dabbled with writing scripts and stuff and talking to people about ideas that maybe someday will, you know,
materialize.
Yeah. And I was going to ask you, how were you able to finance all this? Did you get some assistance, or was it all you? How does it work?
I paid for me to fly down to Dallas, and then I used an Indiegogo crowdfunding to finance the rental of the cameras and the people who followed me around.
Oh, that's very cool. I'm actually about to do either a Kickstarter or an Indiegogo. I think Kickstarter. Because I do some artwork, and so I put it on, yoga pants, workout leggings, and so I'm going to do a Kickstarter for that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So it does work, right, James?
I wanted to use Kickstarter because they're more well-known,
uh-huh.
but Kickstarter would not allow me to do something that had an agenda.
Oh.
They said that they don't do causes.
That's
why I had to go with Indiegogo.
Okay. Well, at least you got an outlet there, and that's cool, you know. So, James Lambert, the film, the website is nomagicbullets.org. You can find the film, which is called Conspiracy Theorists Lie. And this is a 2015 film. And James, thank you so much. By the way, again, you guys can also catch it, if not on that website. It also tells you, you can find it on Amazon and IndieFlix and everywhere else that movies are shown, I guess, eventually, hopefully.
Yes.
James, thank you so much for joining us this morning. Much success to you with the film.
Thank you for having me on.
All the best. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Yeah, I like stuff like that, you know, and that's why, like, when people go with a conspiracy theory on 9/11, I'm like, come on, man. I mean, you know, how many people could actually keep a secret like that?
Yeah, it's pretty insane to think that would be plausible.
Right.
But it's really interesting. I've always been fascinated by that kind of stuff, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's why I watch so many, you know, mysteries and crime stories and, you know, forensic files, things like that. Because I love a good conspiracy or a good mystery. So yeah, it's really interesting. I'll have to look up that film and watch it.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting how he brought up the problem of anti-Semitism and Jew hatred and stuff. The thing is that the... They've had so much of that over the centuries that people have started to believe it. Like,
and it's crazy. Example, I didn't even know that existed.
Really? No. Like, for example, there was a blood libel. That's what they called it, where Christians would blame Jews for killing young children, Christian children, and using their blood for matzah, you know, on Passover. I mean, imagine that, you know.
Oh my gosh.
If you start teaching people this, you know how they, you can see how they would become scared and confrontational with these.
Right.
You know?
I mean, it all boils down to fear.
Yeah.
When someone instills fear in you,
right,
or in the general public, that's when scary things happen.
Right. And that's what people are saying, that some people are saying that Donald Trump is doing.
I was just going to bring that up, actually. I think he's a likable guy.
Yeah.
I mean, I personally do. I think he's funny and likable and, you know, good-natured. But there's some truth to that, I think. I mean, he does instill that fear, and whether it's for a bigger agenda or whether it's just to win an election, because we all know he likes to win.
Yeah.
We don't know.
Yeah.
But the thought of it is very scary, because he is instilling that fear.
Right.
Definitely.
And there's been precedents to it, you know, World War II and World War I, and many wars before, where people were using fear and scare tactics, you know. But I don't think it could ever happen here, anything like that, like fascism and stuff. But nevertheless, you know, some people are saying he's that extreme. So,
he kind of scares me, to be honest. I mean, I don't know.
It's like, because you don't know. I mean, he's like unpredictable. You don't know what he's going to do.
I know.
You know? He's that's the scary part about it.
And anytime you have that much testosterone in the White House, I don't know. I feel like he might do something extreme, drastic. And I don't know how I feel about that.
I know.
Just looking back at his history, he, you know, he seems to be a little bit, you know, maybe impulsive.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know.
And also, you know, I don't think voting out of anger is a good thing, you know. I mean, I'm angry with the current administration. I think the government is really doing some crazy things. But at the same time, you know, I try to go along with it, you know. I mean, you know. So, But I'm not that angry that I think someone like him would really be able to lead the country, you know. I mean, in the beginning, I thought I might actually put my support behind him, but then he starts saying crazy shit, you know.
Yeah.
He really does. And I'm like, you know, this is like, I mean, there's no way he's going to be electable saying all these things.
I know.
You know.
But hey, I know. And, you know, people are saying that, you know, he'll be the Republican nominee and then it'll kill it for Republicans because obviously the Democrats going to win.
Right. Because
you know,
nobody's going to want to. When it's between the Democrat and Trump.
Right. Even Republicans aren't going to.
Right.
You know.
Yeah. And plus, and that's the thing. I mean, there was a debate last night. I didn't really watch it, or I didn't watch it at all. Not just really, but.
Catch the funny highlights on YouTube later.
Yeah. So, exactly, yeah.
I'm guilty. I didn't watch it either. Yeah. Of course, I was driving back from Dana Point until really late in the evening, so
yeah.
I didn't get a chance, but...
I know. Plus, it's like the Democrats, I don't really want to hear what they have to say because I'm already opposed to this administration. I think they made a lot of mistakes. I don't want more of the same.
Right.
So, but at least Bernie Sanders... is trying to show he's not the same. He's sort of like the Trump of the Democratic Party, you know. And Hillary just represents more of the same. So we'll see. But all I can say is just based on what I see on Facebook, a lot of people love this administration and they would put Hillary in there no problem. So we'll see what's going to happen, you know. I don't know. But
Me neither.
Yeah. But I think the whole thing is going to change after people start voting, which is February 1st.
I can't believe it. It's coming up so soon.
I know. The Iowa caucuses and then New Hampshire. And so we'll see. I think then it's actually going to start showing, you know, more than just the polls. And even with that, it's like at the end, you find out that someone somehow impossibly won, you know, and you go, how can that happen?
Right.
Yeah.
There are so many factors, and there's always such a margin of error,
And the thing is also, I hate, as far as elections go, I hate being in California because, first of all, the state always leans heavily Democrat. So,
right.
You know, so with like, so it doesn't matter what you vote and who you elect,
the state's always going to be
Democrat. So why even bother, right? Why even bother going to the polls? And not only that, but we're always also the last ones to report because we're on the West Coast. So what happens is by the time it gets here, it doesn't really matter anymore. You know, mm-hmm. The elections usually are decided. So...
Yeah, so that we're not a swing state.
Exactly. We don't mean, our votes don't mean much if you're a Republican or, yeah. So there you go. So that's the Democratic debate. I guess they're saying Sanders equals Trump, Hillary equals Obama, and, you know, the rest of it is...
I'm actually curious to see who the running mates will be.
Yeah, that's true.
Of the nominees.
Yeah. I know. I can't wait. I mean, it's going to be amazing, you know.
Interesting, for sure.
Yeah. So they talk about money in the economy also, and there's a story here that really grabbed me. They're saying that the 62 richest people have as much wealth as half the world, which, think of it this way. 62 people own what 3.5 billion people own.
It's insane.
Isn't that insane?
Yes.
In the hands of 62 people.
It's pretty incomprehensible.
Yeah. You know, and the thing is that they're saying that it used to be like they needed like 300 and some people to equal half of the world's income.
Mm-hmm.
But now it's only 62 people, and you go, my God, you know.
The rich are getting richer.
Yeah.
The poor are getting poorer.
Yeah. And I know. I mean, it's like $1.76 trillion.
Oh, my gosh.
Between 62 people, man. That's a lot of money.
It is. It is a lot of money.
In the hands of only a few, you know.
Right.
Yeah.
It's kind of crazy to think.
I know. It's like, how do you get to be that rich, you know? I don't know.
I think it has to be
born into oil and, you know, and things like that, I guess.
Yeah. You know, I hate to say it because we all like to think, and you know, it is true that you can come from nothing and make something out of yourself. Obviously, that's true. I mean, we see it over and over again.
Right.
But it is incredibly advantageous if you have a little something to start with.
That's true, huh?
I mean, if you look at a bunch of, you know, the successful entrepreneurs or whatever, successful whatever, whoever out there, the vast majority of them had a good start in life.
Yeah,
and so
that's probably true.
It is. Have something to start with. Yeah. Got a head start, whatever it might be.
Yeah, born into it, sort of.
Yeah. So, you know, not to say that they don't work really hard and keep up the wealth and keep up the business or whatever.
Right.
But,
yeah, like someone like Trump, for example, you know, I mean, he was born into money, you know.
Sure.
And and the same thing. I mean, like your example, I mean, he's also accomplished a lot by himself.
Right.
You know, but you're right. It helps a little when you start with something, you know.
Yes, because it's interesting, though, actually, because I feel like times are changing in that respect because of the internet.
Yeah.
And people can, they don't have to have a lot of money to make a lot of money anymore.
That's true.
In some businesses you do, but not in the cyber boom.
Right.
You know?
No, and there's a lot. Just like our guest, we were talking about him releasing his film and everything, you know, being able to finance it by himself, not with his own money, but he managed to do that.
Right. I mean, you hear of these 30-year-olds becoming billionaires off of, you know, Snapchat or whatever.
Right.
So it is possible nowadays with, you know, more modern, you know, entrepreneurship and businesses to do it starting from nothing. But it's still hard.
Yeah.
You know, it's still hard.
No, that's true. But at the same time, there's a lot of new opportunities in this new economy, you know, of technology and everything. And there's just a lot of opportunity. And it's cool if you are able to catch a wave or something, you know. That's what sometimes you just create something like Mark Zuckerberg, I don't think ever imagined Facebook would be what it is.
You know? Right. And, you know, I hate to say this, but I've learned that being in the entertainment industry, unfortunately, that luck has a lot to do with it. Being in the right place at the right time. I think just in life, really, timing is kind of everything.
That's true, yeah.
You know, timing is really important, and fate, and there are just so many things that that go into making something successful or someone successful.
Yeah.
And success is so funny because it's interesting to, when you kind of travel, you realize that success means different things to different people.
Yeah.
You know, here in America, we seem to be like, oh, money, fast cars, shiny houses, you know, whatever. But so many people I talk to from other places in the world say that, you know, having an amazing spouse or lots of friends or something makes them successful. And that's how they, you know, gauge their success.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I think we should open our eyes a little bit and not necessarily just look at, you know, financial success or what have you to measure it.
That's true. But that's our, that's how we measure our
success.
It is.
It's kind of instilled in our brain.
Yeah. So what can you do? I mean, that's also part of the side effect of living in a capitalistic society, you know.
I know.
Where everybody's out for themselves and everybody has to take care of themselves and carry their own weight, you know. So, yeah.
I know. Other places, it's not like that. But I love America.
Yes.
Don't get me wrong. I love capitalism.
Yeah.
You know, I think the challenge is great and everything. But you're right. It definitely shapes the way that people think.
Right.
In a way that's maybe not all that positive, actually.
Yeah, I don't know. But I learned also not to look at other countries because they're so different from us. And you just got to look at where everybody's moving to. And everybody's coming here, you know. So
there's no doubt it's the best place in the world.
Yeah, so
I mean,
it can't be all that bad. You know what I'm saying?
No, it's amazing.
Yeah. So
I'm always in a hurry to get back.
I know. Isn't it funny? You look forward to going on a trip and then you look forward to coming home.
Yeah.
You know, because there's no convenience and comfort like at home, you know, when you live in America. It really is.
Right. I mean, even when I go other places, you know, people will rave about the food. And I'm like, what food? I don't know what you're talking about. America has everything around every corner.
Right.
And to me, I mean, no other place in the world. You know, I went to Paris, to France, and Oh my gosh, I felt like we just waited at least a half hour every time we sat down to eat food. And I was like, come on, hurry up. And where's our complimentary bread? Like,
see, not everybody's in as big a rush as we are here, you know?
I know. They like to savor.
Yeah, exactly. They slow down a little bit. And we're just like accustomed to, okay, I'm sitting down. Within 8 minutes, I want my food in front of me.
Yeah, right.
You know? And that's the way it is, you know. But over there, they go and they make an afternoon out of it or something, out of lunch, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm really hoping the sun breaks through. It kind of looks like it's going to.
Yeah. Like, do you have to do some shooting today in the sun?
No. Actually, I have a marketing meeting later today with a firm out of Santa Monica. And, you know, a few other business-related things.
Yeah.
And that's
but it just helps when the sun comes out.
It does. It helps my mood. I don't think I could ever live in a place where it was cloudy all the time.
Like overcast all the time.
Yeah.
San Francisco's like that. And San Diego is overcast quite a bit also.
It wouldn't be for me, I don't think. I like the sunshine.
Right.
A little variation is nice.
Yeah, every once in a while, yeah. But we love the sun here.
We do.
That's true. Yeah, give us sunshine. There's a song, It Never Rains in Southern California. Did you know that?
I didn't know that.
Yeah. Albert Hammond was his name. It Never Rains in California.
Oh.
So, or Never Rains in Southern California.
Well, El Nino might prove that wrong.
Yeah, exactly.
Year. But we keep saying that, and where is
it? I know, and we get nothing, right?
I know.
I think it's going to hit us in February like it did last time, yeah.
Oh, probably.
Yeah, that was like a wet February, I remember.
Mm.
And, I mean, the only reason I remember that is because, well, obviously, first of all, when in L.A., it rarely rains, and then it rains so heavily, you remember it. That's one thing. Another thing is that the reason I remember is because that was the month that I came back from living in South Africa for a year.
Oh, what were you doing there?
Yeah. Well, as far as work, I was doing computer animation and stuff, which is what I've been doing.
Oh, how fun.
Right. But I moved there because I met this girl in Israel, and she said, well, why don't you try South Africa? And the way I met her is because she's a friend of my cousin's wife. So,
oh, okay.
Yeah, so we kind of met, and one thing led to another. And then my cousin also said, well, why don't you come down, try it for a while?
Oh, they live in South Africa,
yeah,
I assume.
In Johannesburg, yeah, both of them. So I decided, why not? You know, we'll check it out and stuff. And I loved it, you know. It was amazing, an amazing, amazing country. And you go to Cape Town and stuff, which is like where the two oceans meet, and it's just beautiful there. So I wanted to stay, but you know, I missed my kids so much, I just had to come back.
Right.
You know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But so that was the month I came back, February of 98, and that's when we had that El Nino going on. So that's why I remember it.
Oh.
It was pretty funny. To see all the streets like totally flooded. I mean, we can't handle any rain in the state.
That's what I hear. And after, you know, a while of being here, I haven't seen that yet. I have yet to see it really flood.
Yeah. Well, it did last week or 2 weeks ago, if you remember.
I don't.
You
really?
Don't? Mm-mm. Maybe you were out of town.
Oh, I might have been out of town.
Yeah, like over the holidays.
Oh, okay. That's why. Yeah, I was probably in Texas.
Yeah. Yeah, you were. I think I was here with Sheena that day or something. We were talking about it.
And it was just like
but
torrential.
Like, yeah, it was torrential rain and cars were getting stuck in the floods, you know.
Oh, no.
They closed part of the 101 freeway and things like that. So, yeah, it got pretty bad there for a while. But we're not ready for to handle rain. I remember when I lived in Vegas, the same problem, because when you have desert soil, it doesn't really absorb the water, you know. So you get a lot of flooding there, not great irrigation. So in low places, you get floods.
Yeah, we don't have to worry about that in Texas. Usually it soaks in. But if it's a lot, of course, it floods like anywhere else.
Right.
But there's more dirt to absorb it, yeah. And crops and stuff.
I know.
The most colleges are starting back now. Actually,
that's
back
true. Yeah, my son's going back Wednesday.
My sister goes back tomorrow.
Really?
Tuesday. Yes, it's her last semester at McCombs Business School at UT Austin, so she's excited.
Yeah, so she's going to the same university that you did?
Yes, my alma mater. Yeah, she started off at Rice University, and then she transferred over after one semester there to UT Austin. So
nice.
She made the right choice.
Yeah.
Hopped over.
She's graduating what business, did you say?
McCombs Business School.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, but she's graduating in business. Her degree's going to be in business?
Yes.
Okay,
she's going to have her business degree.
So yeah.
She's very smart, and she's going to do great. I think she's going to go to law school, she's decided. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I know. That's really
cool. Tell her she better be sure that's what she wants to do. I mean, I've just heard of too many lawyers that after a year or two, they're like, that's not for me, you know?
Yeah.
And you go, my God, you spent all this time in school. Now you're going to leave it? You know?
So I mean, that's true, but you know.
You never know.
I feel like I'm still changing what I want to do every day.
Right.
So, hey.
Yeah.
I mean, that's okay. Try it out, and, you know, if she doesn't like it, then.
Exactly.
Move along. I mean, I know people who have, you know, completed their residency and, you know, practiced medicine for a year or two and got out of it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, can you imagine that?
Yeah, that's crazy.
Yeah, that would be crazy, but it's the journey, I guess, that counts.
Yeah, you got it. Yeah. I suppose it is, right?
Yeah, tell that to your bank account,
yeah,
right?
Exactly.
Or the person funding your education. They're like, actually, you need to do it. But I don't know. I think she'll be great. So I'm excited to see what she ends up doing.
Well, that's very cool. That's nice. Does she plan on staying in Texas, or is she planning on moving somewhere?
I think so.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think she's planning on staying in Texas. Yeah. Now, who knows?
Yeah.
Stranger things have happened.
Yeah,
but
not the same crazy dreams as her sister, right?
No. She's not crazy like me. I hold that crown in the family. So. But, so that as of now, we think she's planning to stay in Texas and do that.
Cool. Yeah, stay around the family and stuff.
Yeah, exactly. She would miss everybody too much. Like me, I'm always going home.
Yeah.
Always going back every month or so.
Do you stay in close touch with your family?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I talk to them pretty much every day.
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
that's
pretty
nice.
Much every day. I mean, some days we might just text, but it's usually via phone.
Oh,
via phone call. So
yeah. It's cool you can text with your parents. I mean, my parents would never text. I mean, my mom wants a cell phone. I'm like, what for? You know, you don't go anywhere.
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, they're getting the biggest kick out of me because I just got the new 6S iPhone. And prior to getting it, I hadn't updated my software in so long that it was like, you know, incredibly archaic. And I didn't even have emojis.
Really?
Everybody has emojis.
Yeah.
And I was just like, it didn't actually even register why I didn't have them yet. And so when I got this new phone Friday, I believe it was, my software got updated and everything. It's brand new. And so I'm just going crazy with the emojis now. Like anything that's remotely applicable to what I'm saying, I have to insert.
I know. Emoji. It's like I just got a text with like 10 emojis on there. And I'm like, you know, it's fun to do, but it's like nobody's going to sit there and try to figure out each meaning of each one, you know. But it's colorful and it's nice and it breaks up the text, so why not?
Yeah, but I know. My mom has always been pretty proficient, but my dad, when he started texting, I was like, oh my gosh, we couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
Hey, he hopped on the bandwagon.
Yeah, took the plunge.
Took the plunge, yeah, exactly.
I know. So my mom sees everybody with phones. It's like, I want one. I'm like, you never go anywhere by yourself. Why do you need a phone? You
know? Yeah.
Well, she wants all the little toys all the little things that you can do with it, and like pictures and that. So we just gave her an iPad. She's like,
oh, nice.
Yeah. No, I mean, we didn't buy her one. We just let her kind of use one or learn it. Forget about it. No
oh,
way.
Really?
No
she,
way.
She couldn't.
No. I mean, look, they're getting older, you know. It's like they can't really concentrate as much.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, last night, my dad, I just like, added like another box of like to the TV with movies and stuff. He's like, something happened. It's blurry. I can't see the same way I did. I put it back the way the TV was before. He's like, it's still blurry. It's not the same way it always been. I'm like, oh my God, what happened to him?
Was it blurry?
No.
Oh.
No, he's totally imagining this.
Well, maybe and now his needs, eyes.
Now
maybe
he needs glasses. To put glasses on. No, but he says, but I've been watching without glasses all this time. So it's crazy, but I think something's going on in their mind, you know.
Could be.
No, they're getting a little senile. I really feel it.
Yeah.
Wow, that's scary. All right, folks, we were totally out of time. We got to run out of here so the next show can start. So everybody, thank you all for listening. Kelsey, thank you.
Yes.
Have a wonderful day, and we'll see everybody tomorrow.
Bye, guys.
Listening to Sam in the Morning with Kelsey, only on LA Talk Radio.